Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Greeny. Mike Greenberg, host of Greeny on ESPN Radio, is keeping you up to date on NFL training camps and the latest Aaron Rodgers news. That's Greeny on ESPN Radio, weekdays from 10 to noon Eastern Time, or listen to the podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Also, relive one of the greatest icons and most successful teams in sports history, Michael Jordan and the 97-98 Chicago Bulls. Stream the Emmy and NAACP Image Award-winning series The Last Dance on ESPN+. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk about Simone Biles' return to the Olympics and you guys that were silly enough to try to fight your fathers. But first, all right, Gabe, so like the Olympics, I'm not really in the Olympic spirit like that. In the first week, I'm generally not in the Olympic spirit because I don't really be in the swimming spirit. And that's no disrespect to the swimmers because I understand generally that what they do is very difficult, but I don't really get excited by the swimming, by a photo finish or whatever it is. I don't know. Maybe the water create too much resistance. I don't really have an answer for you. But the swimming itself doesn't really do anything for me. And while we're here to talk about the swimming, I want to ask this question just generally, right? Because I know that people, when they wanted to like discredit Michael Phelps, I don't discredit the right word. I probably said some of this stuff too. You can win all those gold medals in swimming in part because you can swim more, right? Like you can do it over and over again. And they come up with all these different ways for you to swim, right? You can do it backwards. You can do it like this. You can do it with your arms coming around. Like they got all the strokes or whatever. There ain't but so many different ways that you can run, right? Like there's but so many gold medals that you can make as a running person. But I was thinking about this the other day, the butterfly stroke. For what? Like who sat up in a room and came up with this idea? All right, so you know that one way we swim? Yeah, let's do something harder. Like, what kind of dumbass idea is that? Like, you ever really stopped and thought about it? There is no purpose to the butterfly stroke. There is no purpose to the breaststroke. If you got to get away from a shark or a jellyfish or, you know, just somebody, you know, like some kind of, like, water serial killer, I don't know. You ain't going to do the butterfly stroke to get away. You're going to get caught. That dude gonna be doing the strokeity stroke and he just gonna come get you. Like the backstroke, I get that, I understand. I see why there's a circumstance under which you might decide to do that. Why the hell would you ever do any of these other swimming strokes? Seriously, stop and think about that for a second. What is the point of the butterfly stroke? Name one advantage you get from swimming like that. Name one advantage you get. Can you name one? Because I can't.
I stand to be corrected, but I feel like with the butterfly, it's like the least resistant stroke. Because if you look at like a dolphin swimming through the water, they're basically doing the butterfly.
Yeah, but you know why dolphins do that? Because they ain't got arms. The dolphins wouldn't swim like that if they had arms. I'm not saying that they came up with this just to make up a whole bunch of Olympic sports. I'm just saying that people be so desperate to have something on their name. I invented a harder way to swim. Great for you, whoever you are. Also, shout out to those of you who listened to the podcast last week and learned from us that in water polo, they were not standing on the ground. A lot of people told me that they simply did not, and I can get it, right? They did not realize that water polo players were not like their feet on the ground, which then suddenly made water polo a lot more impressive to them. A lot more impressive. Not gonna lie. Maybe they should have water polo with your feet on the ground. I bet it might be a little bit more exciting. People could get a little bit more, you know, oomph on some of them throws. But think about how crazy that is. These dudes be treading water, and ladies, sorry about that, be treading water to pull their bodies up above the water and throw that ball as hard as they can. That's tough work. But, you know, no shade to anybody who thought that they were standing on the ground. I wouldn't think that people were capable of doing that without standing on the ground either. But I just wanted to let you know this was a safe space. And I'm glad that I was able to educate y'all on this because I had some homies hit me up and say they did not know until I told them, which tells me that a bunch of y'all didn't know either. Anyway, Swimming week is the first week, and it just don't really, like, do that much for me. But clearly, I have jokes. But the track and field has begun. It is ridiculous weave season out here on the track. If you have not seen it, that is the one thing. Yo, this is, so I got this thing that really bothers me, which is, and a lot of you younger folks have a tendency to do this, which is when y'all be getting mad at stuff the white folks say before the white folks even say it. Right. So like when Sha'Carri Richardson first came to prominence at the trials and people decided that she was going to be their new hero, you know, they was all about it because she had that big old orange colored weaver wig. I don't know which one it is. I don't separate these things very well, but she had it and it was like fiery and all of that stuff. And I saw people, you know, the white folks going to have something to say about her hair. And I'm like, have you ever watched track and field? They going to have a, if they got something to say about her hair, that's fine. But she's going to be maybe the seventh person they get around to. It's all about ridiculous hair when it comes to the sprints and the ladies out there. That is always like, I don't know how they pick out which one they're going to get. I understand it's probably very difficult to maintain, especially when you out the country and you doing all this running and sweating and everything. Anyway, it is that time of year and it has happened. And I derive entertainment from watching these sorts of things. Like, be who you are, but I would think that that can't help you run faster. That's all I'm saying. That's my only guess. But we had the 100 meter final for the men. And look, let's be real. We ain't have Bolt this year, but the 100 meters is the number one event at the Olympics, period, right? Like, this is the one event that I can reasonably say everybody in the world has a chance to be a champion at this one. You know, it's the most basic fundamental athletic activity that we can come up with is the 100 meter dash. Like, I cannot say that there is anyone who did not have access to running 100 meters. You know, to what it takes to be in a, ain't a whole lot to learn, all that. This is the one. But this year, I was watching 100 meters, and I ain't really know nothing about anybody that was in the race. I can't think of the last time that I had felt that way. It's not like I follow track all the time, but I always felt like I knew who the people were that were in the 100 meter final. I don't think I knew who anybody was in the 100 meter final, which I think kind of led to a joy in watching the 100 meter final play out in the sense that, hey, man, the 100 meters was won by a dude from Italy. I didn't know that they was doing the sprinting. And like, I knew they watched it, but I didn't know they were actually competing in it. But hold up, though. The dude that won it from Italy, his name is Lamont. It's some black dude from Italy named Lamont. And he ran a 9.80. Yeah. I didn't know such a thing was possible. I haven't bothered to read what the backstory is on Lamont because I'm going to be honest with you. Any story you tell me is going to be less fun than whatever I could come up with in my own head. And the truth doesn't matter that much to me right now. I did have people tell me, though, that they look Lamont. His name is Lamont Jacobs. His name is Lamont Marcel Jacobs. Marcel is his middle name. And they said that they looked him up in the wiki and he was listed as Marcel Jacobs. So apparently in Europe, they call him Marcel. But in America, we know a Lamont when we see one. And his name is Lamont. Now, this led me to a couple of thoughts that I'll tell you. I shared a little bit on Twitter, but I'm going to keep going on this because I think these are two fundamentally important points that we need to understand here. Number one, as Americans, I was thinking about it. I don't think an American has won the 100 meter dash. Like, I actually have no idea the last time an American won the 100 meter dash at the Olympics. Let me find out. 100 meter dash Olympics winners.
Is it Justin Gatlin?
Well, I was thinking it was Justin Gatlin. Yeah, it was Justin Gatlin in 04. And didn't they like take that away from him? He was on that whatchamacallit. You know what I'm saying? But it's been a long time. And I feel like that's the kind of event that we used to like dominate. Like, everybody gets so mad about the basketball team when they lose, how we supposed to be ahead of the world. We ain't ahead of the world in the sprints. And to make it even worse, it's one thing that we ain't got the fastest man in the world or the fastest woman in the world. We ain't got the fastest Lamont in the world. Like, if you would have told me anything, I would have made the assumption that in the United States, we had the fastest Lamonts anywhere. And it's another country, Italy no less, that got a Lamont faster than us. And it was also interesting to make this joke on the tweets because white people are like, yeah, what a French sounding name. And I had never considered that Lamont would have French origins until then. It makes total sense, right? Like that would be French, but I don't think nothing French when I hear about somebody named being Lamont. I ain't met a single person named Lamont that spoke a word of French, but I understood where they were coming from. They're like, oh, okay, that sounds French, because you white, you don't know no Lamonts. I get that. Your world just ain't brought you in the same space as having Lamonts. Somehow you never watched Sanford and Son. Psh, whatever. I don't know what kind of daddy you had, you know, controlling the channels or whatever it was. You know, it happens. That's that sort of thing. We got to at least get back to producing the fastest Lamont in the world. Like, I feel like that's something that we should be able to do here. We should have the number one Lamont. Yeah, better sprinters just in general, but definitely we should have a better Lamont. Right, Gabe?
Why do you think we don't have any more like high level sprinters anymore? Remember the days of Michael Johnson with like the gold shoes and stuff?
Yeah, I don't know. Although I read up on this, there's some dude named Christian Coleman who apparently is like the best sprinter in the world, but he messed around and missed 3 drug tests. And so he got banned for 2 years. And so now he was not able to participate in the event. Dude, I feel bad for us. Tyson Gay. Somebody reminded me this and I didn't understand. Dude, Tyson Gay in 2012 in that race in London, Tyson Gay ran a 9.80 and did not get a medal. Lamont ran a 9.80 and won the gold this year. Tyson Gay at the crib, like, I been could have done that. But anyway, we got that element of the Lamont story. Other thing that happened with Lamont, and I just felt like this was such serendipity that I can't believe that nobody made this happen. All right, so Lamont, and just so you understand, Lamont is black. Like, I didn't want to, like this isn't hashtag white Lamont. You know what I'm saying? This is an actual black man, Lamont Jacobs, and he was running for Italy. And NBC does the coverage of this. And I just felt like NBC has somebody who would love nothing more in this world than to do an interview with the Italian 100-meter champion. And, I mean, maybe it's happened. You guys can let me know. But where is the sit-down interview with Mike Tirico and Lamont Jacobs where they can trade stories? Like, I don't... Mike Tirico should have been on the track and put that Italian flag around Lamont like James Brown was coming off stage. I just can't imagine how there's any person in the world who would be more proud of Lamont Jacobs than Mike Tirico. The way Mike Tirico puts on for Italy, his ancestral homeland, I just can't understand why he's not the one that's down there. I know he puts on for the Italian soccer team. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know he bought that. I know he reps for the crib, for the ancestors. You know what I'm saying? There you go right there. You got Lamont Jacobs, Italy's own Lamont Jacobs, a man that I am sure can relate to some things that Mike Tirico can relate to. I just can't. Why was he not? How has this not happened? What good is having Mike Tirico on your broadcast if you can't do something with him in this moment right now? I just don't see it. I just don't get it. Like, can somebody, they could have got Franco Harris on the phone to talk about this. They had all kinds of people that they could have got on the case to make this happen. They didn't see the opportunity. It's right there. It's right there in front of you. Mike Tirico would have shed tears on television. Don't y'all love that when men shed tears just because they're so emotional? Isn't that great television? Isn't that a compelling visual? Isn't that why you watch the Olympics? But we ain't get that. So America ain't get the gold, and America did not get to see Mike Tirico, like, the culmination of a dream. He should be able to retire after this. There's nothing left for you to do. You've done it all. Italian Lamont just won the gold medal on your watch. He could have got to the bottom of things that none of us ever could have. Just saying, I don't want to tell people how to do their jobs. You know what I'm saying? I don't feel comfortable being the person who does that. Somebody dropped the ball here. And if Mike Tirico was not excited about doing such an interview, gotta be honest with you, it made me wonder some things about Mike Tirico. All right, so we've talked about Simone Biles and her backing away from a few events at the Olympic Games after going through the team competition and just, you know, looking at herself, looking at her performance and saying that she needed to back away. She needed some time, you know, and she will return to compete in the balance beam. This is the one that she's decided that at this point, she says, I mean, I guess she feels okay enough. She feels confident enough to come out and compete in the balance beam competition. And I have to be honest with you, given all the things that we've talked about in the last few days, that people have explained more about, you know, the twisties and getting lost in the air and all these things that we didn't know about, I think people have done a very good job of informing us and helping us to understand better what the risks and consequences of being out there when your head's not in it would be. And I think the plan was to engender a measure of empathy from us, you know, so people can't just be like, oh, you're quitting and da-da-da and all this stuff. And I think it's been largely effective. Like, you've had a couple of jerks who've decided they were going to come out and make they hustle out of saying how, you know, Simone Biles is quitting and da-da-da and everything else. We ain't got to engage these bad faith actors. I've been saying this for the last year and change. I've stuck with it. Your dumb asses keep letting them do it, but whatever, right? I have to say, the idea that her return comes on the balance beam for me is like low-key terrifying. You know, like, I'm going to assume that she's all right. That if she's going to do this, she is all right. I am also going to entertain the possibility that part of why she may have made this decision to return now in this moment, like when she has some connection to the fact, like, this is it. This is, I want to say her last Olympics, but it's more important to say it's her second. Right, she was the best gymnast in the world in advance of the 2012 Olympics, but was too young to compete. So she lost out on that one. And I imagine that she doesn't want to go out like she went out before. Right? She does not want the last of what we saw of her to be the last of what we see of her. Like, I think that's possible. I have not seen specifically her say why it is she's coming back and all of those things, but I can see that as reasonable. And I hope that that desire is not trumping what is best for her. But again, I have to trust, under a circumstance like this, she knows herself and she knows her body better than the rest of us do. And she's going to be able to come out here and do whatever it is that she needs to do. The thing that I just want to kind of say, I want to try to avoid lecturing you and telling you what you should do, but I guess I can just put it in the context of the way that I look at this. I think that what we just need to do is appreciate seeing Simone Biles one more time, no matter how she performs, right? Like, allow her this victory lap. Like, we talk about Kobe Bryant and the 60 points in his last game and all of that. But the part that mattered was just the last game. If he had scored 25, that would have been cool. You know, like, we didn't need some Disney-fied moment. We work here, but still. We didn't need some Disney-fied moment in the end, you know? Like, we didn't need to turn it into a movie or something like that to make it a worthwhile experience for those of us who watched it. And if you had any investment in Kobe's career, you were just getting to watch Kobe play one more time. And that's how I feel about this with Biles. We got the chance to watch her one more time. So let's watch it one more time. Maybe she comes out and she does a performance unlike anything that we have ever seen. I guess that's possible. Maybe she comes out here and she looks absolutely dreadful. I guess that's possible. I would be perfectly satisfied if she just came out and stood on that balance beam and just stood there and just waved, right? Thanks for the memories. That would be good enough for me. Like, if there were people there, and I guess that's part of this too, is that there aren't people there. If she got on the balance beam and just stood there and looked at the crowd and it turned into like a standing ovation, to me, that would be enough for that to be like a memorable experience or something worth checking out. But I don't think, especially since it's the Olympics and we don't really care, there ain't no point in us evaluating her performance, but so critically. Like, there's room to evaluate it critically, like if she does well and we start talking about whether or not she deserves a gold medal and stuff like that, or if like the score seems higher than her performance, you know, something along those lines, then yeah, there's room for us to talk about it. But like, the last thing I want to do after she has her and gets on the balance beam, last thing in the world that I feel like doing is getting on television and being like, well, how good was she? Well, what did she think? Or da 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 and everything else. To me, that doesn't seem to be the point of this. The point seems to be, in this moment, with whom we have and what we're watching, is we know we got one more chance to watch one of the greatest competitors of all time. And we get to see her after we were reminded of what it is to not have this great competitor, because we had these few days where she wasn't there. Like, you could ask yourself how interested you were in watching the rest of the gymnastics program without Simone Biles there. I know for myself personally, not really. Can't speak for nobody else, right? But that's just me. For the rest of it, no, not really. She is the person whom I wanted to see. And so we get one more chance to see this. And we have gone through a week of people using Biles as an avatar for their own lives and for everything else. And then it gets us to Djokovic, who's like, yo, pressure is, you know, the privilege, da da da, all this stuff. And then he goes out here and loses his mind after he loses a match and everything else. And so everybody then gets to go dunk on Djokovic about this and da 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 and everything else. You know, like all of this. Like, we've done this and we've taken it to all these places that really don't have a damn thing to do with Simone Biles. They don't. You know, you and I all have a tendency, as we observe this, to try to find this as a way to explain our own lives or discuss everything else that we're going through. And honestly, it's just getting to be a little bit infuriating because some of it is just such ridiculous reaches. And some of these are columns that are being terribly edited because it's people who don't know anything about the people that are being discussed. And all. It's just, I don't know, I've just found it to be a big old giant mess as we grow more and more self-absorbed and try to make all these other things into something about us when they're really not. This right now, 100% entirely about Simone Biles. Good for her that she has found a place where she can come back and do this one more time. Good for her if she can be as excellent as we have seen all these other times. And if she can't, you know what? Good for her, because she's getting one more chance to go out here on this stage that she has earned, the stage that she deserves, and this stage that we are fortunate to be an audience surrounding. And let's get what we get out of this. Let us enjoy it for however it goes. And in the end, let us say thank you, because she did a lot for a whole lot of people that went beyond just simply performing in gymnastics by competing and doing what she could in this. And that is where the focus is, should be. And honestly, the people who can't focus there, stop talking to them and leave them alone, right? Like, let them be sour, let them be jerks over wherever the hell they are. But screaming about how stupid they are to a bunch of people who already agree with you, aside from the fact that it's not helping you, it's really annoying. Trust me. So let it go.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from music.
Hey, it's Andrew Limbong, arts reporter at NPR. So essentially, the United States has sold the only copy of the Wu-Tang Clan album Once Upon a Time in Shaolin. This was the album previously owned by Martin Shkreli, the infamous pharma bro guy who jacked up the price of a life-saving drug by a bunch of money and then was later convicted of securities fraud, and he got sentenced to 7 years in prison. He had reportedly paid $2 million for the album back in like 2015. The album itself was taken by the United States government as a part of the forfeiture process to sort of pay back all the money that he is convicted of defrauding from people. So the United States has now sold the album to an anonymous buyer, an anonymous price point, but it has been enough to make the $7.4 million forfeiture like whole. It is the only copy of the album that exists. When it first came out, RZA was like, there's no digital copy, there's no other physical copy, there's no other duplicate, this is the only one. And so it's a unique bit of art here.
I just want to know who bought it. Because the one thing about this Shkreli cat is the biggest clown in the world. And let us never forget, Gabe, you ever seen that video when Ghostface decided to give that man a straightening of sorts? Yeah. Like, it's like, I hate that dude, man. Like, I can't think of anybody that I hate more that I don't actually know. I hate Martin Shkreli so much. I know so little about him, and I hate him so much. But I am not discounting the possibility that the new owner of this album is actually a worse person than him. That's entirely possible, that it's a worse person than him.
If it's been sold to a person that we do not know about in some sort of like secret auction, isn't it pretty much a guarantee that it's not going to like the best person?
Yes, you are correct. You are correct. I'll just never forget forever. Did you ever see when they did jury selection for his trial and somebody basically got themselves off the jury because they said that they could not evaluate him fairly because he disrespected the Wu-Tang Clan? People believe in the Wu, baby. People believe in the Wu.
All right, this next story comes from business.
This is Joseph Pisani for the Associated Press. I recently wrote about Amazon and its mission, which is to get access to as many apartment buildings in America as it can. The company has been sending salespeople to cities across the country, trying to get landlords and building managers to agree to install a device on their buzzer systems. This device then lets delivery drivers unlock the building's front doors with a phone whenever they have a package to deliver at that address. The idea is that they can leave packages in the lobby instead of outside where they could be stolen. Amazon says the device has been installed in thousands of buildings across the country, but wouldn't give a specific number. Amazon salespeople have been knocking on doors, they make cold calls, or they approach building managers on the street urging them to install the device. The company has even partnered with local locksmiths to push it on building managers while they fix locks. Amazon installs the device for free and sometimes throws in a $100 Amazon gift card to whoever lets them in. Amazon says the program, which is called Key for Business, is a way to cut down on stolen packages. But Amazon benefits a lot from it because delivery workers can make their rounds faster if they don't have to wait outside ringing doorbells. And fewer stolen packages means Amazon saves money because anytime a package is stolen, they have to refund the customer. But it may also bring up security and privacy concerns. The company said it does do background checks on delivery people and that they can only unlock doors when they have a package in hand to scan. But the tenants of the building may not know that Amazon drivers have access to their building because Amazon leaves it up to the building to notify them. One privacy expert that I talked to said that the Amazon device, because it is connected to the internet, could be hacked, and hackers could use it to unlock the doors themselves. But Amazon declined to comment on that.
All I'm saying is Amazon is not doing any of this stuff for you, for the building. Anybody coming in here offering to do something like that for free because it'll help you out? You think Jeff Bezos got to space by doing things for other people? Like, he can give you a Venn diagram of overlapping interest, right? But has Jeff Bezos done any of this in the name of helping somebody? No. No, nobody gets to be a billionaire by doing that. That's not how things work. So whatever the setup is, damn it, it's a setup. And I would not be interested in participating in this whatsoever. They're like, yeah, we just, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, nobody can like steal your stuff. And like, yeah, that's a real concern. I feel you on that. How about you stop marking up these packages with all these Amazon logos that make it clear to people that there's something here to be stolen? How about that?
I feel like they're counting on that people don't think past the initial A to B deduction that you made, that they have a key, it makes things easier. Not that they have a key, so there's some sort of security concern.
Yeah, and there's a lot to this because in most of my Amazon era, right, where I've been really like ordering stuff on Amazon, I've lived in buildings that have a doorman. And so that just really simplifies the whole package process is that. Comma, however, not everybody's living that life. So this is a thing, though, for Amazon about whether it be people's front porches or whatever it is, you know, delivering packages in such a way that people don't feel like their stuff is going to get stolen. Like, not everybody lives in a neighborhood where you could just reasonably expect that if a box got dropped off on the porch at 10, that it'll even be there at 11. Like, not everybody is there. There is an argument that's going to be able to be made. But the way they're doing this, they're not talking to individuals about this. They're talking about the owners of the buildings who may or may not tell the people that this is going on, right? Now, I would think that if you lived in a building like that, that had such a setup, then what the game plan really needs to be there is, and I don't know exactly how you establish it, I think there's some ties that bind with people living in the same place. But if there's a package outside the building, bring it inside. You know what I mean? Like, everybody just got to do that for themselves, and that can work. Because, I mean, honestly, if somebody in your building steals your package, there's a camera to pick that up. It ain't going to be that hard for you to figure out who did that. Yo, you know what's wild about this? A part of why we're here and the way I feel about this is just the distrust I have for them because of all the other surveillance stuff, you know, and everything they do. Like, somehow, I would trust USPS with this. Think about how crazy that is. I trust the government more than I trust you, Amazon.
All right, this last story comes from tech.
I'm Rachel Lerman, a technology reporter for the Washington Post. This week we wrote about Scout. Scout asks a lot of questions. How are you feeling today? Oh, your head hurts? Where does it hurt? How long has it hurt? Does it feel like you're going to cry when you bend over? Scout is a robot, and its job is just to ask a lot of questions because it's trying to figure out what's wrong with you, so it can give you a recommendation of what you should do within your healthcare system. Tech like Scout are called health chatbots, or sometimes symptom checkers, and they grew a ton during the pandemic as people were trying to stay away from in-person visits to doctor's offices as much as possible. Health systems started using them to test and see if people really needed COVID tests. They would bring them through a series of questions to see if they were eligible to get a test. But Scout isn't at all qualified to be a doctor. Legally, it doesn't diagnose you, and it learns from clinical databases and user interactions, meaning its data is somewhat limited. What it mostly does is get you to the right place. If you go to Scout and tell it that you have a bad headache, you've been feeling this way for a while and it's not going away, it might suggest that you call your doctor to make an appointment, or it could tell you to go to the urgent care, or it might suggest a trip to the emergency room. Scout and other technology like it is pretty cautious about this because the companies behind it want to make sure that they're not letting anyone who's really sick just stay home. So more often than not, it'll probably tell you to talk to a doctor. These health chatbots have exploded in use during the pandemic, but you can rest assured that doctors are really going to stick around.
Yeah, they're going to stick around, but I get it, right? Like everything here on this, I get it. Because look, Gabe, getting people that are qualified to work in a call center is one thing. Getting people who are qualified to work in the doctor call center, yeah, I feel like your training should make it such that you ain't gonna work in no call center. You understand what I'm saying? Like the one thing I can say for the bot in this case is I don't really have a great solution for like who it is that you call on the phone that's supposed to be able to let you know exactly what to do. Because at all these other call centers on stuff like that, they just basically run it off some kind of flow chart, you know, or they put in yes, no, and waiting for the computer to give them an answer or something like that. But they don't like tech support. This is high stakes for a tech support line is all it is that I'm saying. However, it just don't feel right. That's all it is. I don't have nearly the faith in the technology that the people behind the technology tend to have. I just don't have faith in it. The question for me becomes, is their default go to a doctor or your default stay home? Because they say they want to make sure that people don't wind up staying home rather than going to a doctor or whatever else. But they in the game of saving companies money. Like the whole purpose of this really is not to help people. It is to save these folks money. And again, it just doesn't feel right.
Is there anything more high stakes for a call than your health?
Right. Like there ain't a lot of room for rut-row. Our greatest voicemails are fueled by Gatorade. Whatever path you take to greatness, Gatorade is there to fuel it. Greatness starts with G.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, voicemail time. Oldie but goodie. The time you tried to come at your old man. We got a bunch of good ones. Of course, very few names and locations. Our first comes from Daniel in Lafayette. Here he is.
So I had just turned 18. I'm feeling myself. And I even said it in a joking manner. My dad came in the living room, and I'm feeling myself. I'm a wrestler at this point. So I tell my dad, I say, you know what? I think I can take your old man. Now, I mind you, my dad's shorter than me, but he's huge. And I mind you, I'm not tall at all. I'm only 5'7". My dad's like 5'5". But he's 5'5", 240, no gut. Like, he's one of those kind of people. Just country strong, grew up killing pigs. But, yeah, so, and I give him like a little shoulder shrug. I'm joking. Next thing you know, I'm on the floor, a massive bicep wrapped around my neck. He got me in a sleeper hold on the floor. I swear I'm about to pass out. And all he's whispering in my ears, just tap, just tap. And me being the dumbass that I am, I refuse to tap. I'm like, I'm going to just pass out on the floor. I ain't giving him the benefit of a doubt. And right when I feel I'm about to go, all you hear is my mama from the kitchen. Let my baby go. Ooh, boy. I swear to God, air never felt so good. So as he was letting me go, as my mama screams from the kitchen, he gets up, slaps me behind the head, like, calls me the P word, and just walks off. I ain't never tried him again. And until this day, My pops is almost 60 years old and still bench presses 300.
Just tap. Just tap. He didn't give you the warning. He ain't give you none of that. He just went straight to it because you needed to know right then and there what time it was. I felt like he laid out all the reasons this was a bad idea before we got into it. Even with the jokes, and I've been a youngster too, but like, I would have thought this, some math would have come up before then that would have told him, this man does not joke about these kinds of things. Like, that's a big thing. You got to know what your daddy do and don't joke about. And I get the feeling from his description, and the most important part of that description obviously being that he is 5'5". My guess would be from that description, yeah, he don't joke about a lot.
Interesting that it's like a common theme to have short dads.
Yes, because they get tried by everybody. They damn sure not about to get tried by their sons.
This next one, the guy didn't leave his name or where he's from, but it's a good one, though.
Hey, Bo, story with my dad goes like this. I was 17. It was summer. I was just, you know, sleeping in, hanging out. My dad wanted me to cut the grass. I didn't think it needed to be cut. He said, when I come home from work, the grass better be mowed. I kind of puffed out my chest a little bit and shouted at him, for what? Now, I'm not exactly know how it happened, but somehow he teleported from 20 feet away from me to right in front of my face, grabbed my collar, looked me in the eye and said, if you ever think about swinging on me, you better knock me out or kill me because I'm coming for you. Needless to say, the grass was mowed. We didn't have any problems after that. Love the show. Bye.
He didn't even threaten him. He just hit him with the or what? And Pops went all the way. Like, Gabe, you've taken some game theory in your studies, right? Pops did what they called a backward induction. He went all the way to the end game. I know how this game is going to end. We don't need any of these other steps. I'm going right to my best response. And my best response is, if you swing on me, you better knock me out or kill me. That grass ain't never looked that good. That grass looked like they was about to play the U.S. Open. Oh, man.
Another good one to finish us off. No name or location.
So I was in high school about junior year. I mean, I was an overweight kid, over 315 pounds, quit football, lost all that weight, started hitting the gym, feeling good, feeling confident. And then I was at a family gathering, and I decided, you know what, I want to take on my old man in front of my family. Started talking trash, talking back. And my dad, like, you know, he's a 35-year-old electrician working in Houston in the hot sun. You know, he don't take crap from nobody. And he's probably the most ripped guy in my family. And then when I started talking mess with him, acting like, what are you going to do about it? He grabbed me by the neck in front of everybody, took me into the room, and he told me straight up, you may be too old for a spanking. You ain't never too old for a beating. So ever since then, I never took him on. But, yeah. Lesson learned.
What were you thinking? I'm surprised he did you the dignity of taking it behind closed doors. And again, it seems these guys misunderstood. None of them had the dad to warn you. They all went straight to the logical conclusion. They all skipped every step. They went straight to it.
Do you think the dad was about to be embarrassed in front of his whole family?
In front of his queen? No, apparently he did think that was going to happen. And he was wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Whew, that was fun. But ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Andrew Limbong of NPR. Check out his story on Martin Shkreli's Wu-Tang album being sold. Thanks to Joseph Pisani of the AP. Check out his story about Amazon trying to get in your front door. It's a long story, but check it out. Also, thanks to Rachel Lerman of the Washington Post. Check out her story on chatbots in healthcare. Whew, a little bit spooky. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.